Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you all for joining us here on the program. As you always do, whether you find the show through CannabisRadio.com, the Cannabis Radio app, or, of course, through all major podcast portals, which includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio, among other major podcast platforms. And Blum Business is powered by the Buzz CRM. The Buzz CRM, we get it after all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works. You're ready for something steady, something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. And we now have the 2025 redesign of Buzz CRM. You've heard about it. You know I've talked about it before. We're going to continue to bring it up more. And we will have webinars coming up soon where you will get a chance not only to see under the hood as to what is behind the Buzz CRM and why it's a great sales system. Imagine having multiple sales associates being brought onto you through AI. Be able to go ahead and handle lead generation and help you filter out the very best of the best so you can convert more and spend less time on the phone. Or spend less time sending out emails that are going nowhere. Think about it. A CRM that sees your work, streamlines your workflows, gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. TheBuzzCRM.com. That's the place to go. Low barrier to entry. I've told you about it. Go get it. Don't procrastinate anymore. Not a good word. Don't procrastinate. Go ahead and buy now. TheBuzzCRM.com. You'll be glad you did. And on the program today, I'm welcoming back attorneys that are specializing in the food and beverage industry. They will both work extensively with a diverse range of cannabis and food and beverage clients, including manufacturing, distributors, wholesalers, retailers, restaurants, and grocers. They provide counsel on the industry's dynamic regulatory environment and proactively help clients identify potential challenges. Both are closely monitoring the Southeast's stance on the cannabis THC-infused product market and potential impacts of proposed legislation, particularly on the Southeast's evolving attitude towards THC products and the expected effects of new legislation on the market. And Vern Davis, who used to host our plant products program, I'm sure he would have been a niche to go into this interview, but I get to go ahead and interview Ed Brown and Tucker Herden. They are both managing partners at Burr and Foreman. Gentlemen, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having us.
Or should I say counselors? But either which way. Let's go ahead and move along into this. Now, there are quite a few things that are going on within the industry when it comes to beverages in various states, but specifically, we're going to focus on Georgia. And we've already gone through before, Tucker was on with us last August, if I'm looking back in our files, that we had talked about how the FDA was already going after with cease and desist letters to several companies marketing edible Delta-8 THC products and packaging that closely resembles popular children's snacks. So something that looks like Skittles, like Chips Ahoy. That was a couple of years ago. I still see some stories ramble on around that. And there's, of course, the FDA continue to crack down. I'm sure even more so now with the new administration in place since we last talked. But now let's focus on Georgia. And we've talked quite a bit here on the program about that with several cannabis companies that are operating out of Georgia and the issues that are going on with that. So there's been a sudden move to ban THC-infused drinks and restrict Delta-8 and Delta-9 and other products in the state of Georgia. That's prompted questions about a shift in the Southeast's stance on hemp-derived cannabinoids and a potential impact on the market. So if Georgia's right now the cornerstone, key that picks a lock to other states surrounding it, other vicinities, to look at the same thing. So either one of you, does this signal a decisive shift in the previously ambiguous stance on hemp-derived cannabinoids, and could it close the door on a burgeoning market segment that had good revenue last year?
I mean, I'll start just because I am in Georgia.
The good news in Georgia is the legislative session has ended with no legislation coming through this year. It went through quite a roller coaster of various bills and amendments to bills that did everything from had a bill at one point to pass the Senate that basically banned THC beverages of all types to a bill that the final one that passed the committee in the House actually expanded the ability to distribute it to liquor stores. So it is all over the ballpark as to what people are trying to do and what the legislatures are looking at. The Georgia one was a change. Georgia passed a bill last year in 2023 that took effect in October that did provide some regulatory guidance for Delta 9 beverages and certain foods, gave some, took some away, but it was there. This was seen to be an effort this year to try to expand a little bit into other areas, really pretty consistent with at least what I've seen in other states. I know Alabama, which is still in session, has a bill I think they passed last week in the House that is very similar to some of the Georgia bills, tried to restrict the amount of THC in products, bring it down, and particularly in the beverages. They had a bill in there at one point to ban them all together. I don't know. I think Tennessee, not about Tennessee, but I think
Tennessee just came into the news today. So first of all, we're going to make mention before you jumped in there about the Florida Senate, first of all, passing a bill to restrict hemp right. products like Delta 8. And then today, as a recording, Tennessee lawmakers redefine hemp and cannabinoids that ban THCA and Delta 8 THC. So now outlawing those products. So the effect, the domino effect has already started in play. And with these other states are surrounding it, whether it's either Alabama, Mississippi, whatever else might go ahead and go into play. I mean, do you see that could create a domino effect that there's other states revisiting this issue as well?
I believe so. Georgia's, as what we've seen over the last probably year and a half to 2 years, a lot of these states are learning on the fly and they're trying not to make immediate knee-jerk reactions. And as such, you see rulings like, you know, the legislation that came out of Tennessee that banned the flower and banned THCA. And that was after extensive studies and the determination with the legislatures viewing and observing what the Tennessee Department of Agriculture has seen, because they are the regulatory body that is dealing with the hemp legislation and licensing issues. But even the Department of Agriculture got to the point where they thought that was out of their purview, and they now have passed that based upon the new statute that is going to come into effect that makes hemp and cannabinoid products to be regulated by the Tennessee Alcoholic Beverage Commission. And it's interesting because for years, the Tennessee Alcoholic Beverage Commission was very open to say they wanted nothing to do with cannabis.
We're back to the same issue from last year, Tucker, because it still comes down to the fact when I talked to you then, when it came to the FDA and cracking, or the FTC as well, when it came to, at that time, packaging marketing. But now we're also back to, once again, public health concerns about Delta THC products, and now these lawmakers are coming in and intervening. It still comes down to the fact that we have a hemp bill that has been pushed back to next year, 2026. Kick the can down the road. Once again, I thought we would have some changes in Congress, but obviously the status quo stays the same. We can't get any regulation when it comes to hemp. We can't get any regulation to where maybe a universal standard like the American Cosmetics Act of 1930 can be brought into play. And that could be the standard so that everybody knows the level playing field they have to go and work off of. So we don't have that yet. It could easily be the same problem. I mean, is there anything being said about why the states can't even follow this kind of standard? If they can't wait for the federal legislature to do something, why can't they look at that standard on a state level and just say, okay, look, this has been done by the FDA and the FTC. This will offer compliance. Why can't the states offer that?
There doesn't seem to be much desire to do that. Although I have to say, I think if I look around at the bills that are floating around this year, they're tending to be a lot of, obviously these people are talking to one another, right? Because you're seeing very similar actions and attempts in different states. I don't think that's just absolutely happenstance. So I think they are, but there's nobody seems to be, I agree, trying to say, well, let's take Minnesota, right? You know, very kind of progressive, probably the state that got out in front of this and say, okay, they've created a regulatory environment. They've created rules on this. Can you use that as a boilerplate to start? It does not seem to have a lot of political desire to do that. And I don't know if it is a function that I think a lot of the legislators at this point, I agree with you, are standing on the health issue. That we, you know, when you see a lot of these bills, we want to limit the amount. We want to control and make sure that, you know, it doesn't create other problems. They're standing on that really more than anything else.
We also know that Texas is looking to also ban THC products just after it started the business in there. And we talked to some folks over there in that end of the world. And the same thing goes. Alabama has approved regulations on hemp products. But again, everybody is all over the place. There is a universal standard in place. Something can be said about this. Is it, I mean, as part of it? I mean, here's the thing. Now, as attorneys, I don't know what clients have been out there. I'm not saying if it's your team that have represented or not, but can that be used as an argument to say, listen, why can't lawmakers just look and say, okay, then let's just set something aside until the FDA comes and intervenes, because all they're doing is cracking down, but they don't have any rules or a framework to work by.
Yeah. And I think, George, what we're seeing is the overall compounds that are consistently being created. We're not just talking about THC that they cut tape from a flower and they are trying to determine, you know, the dry weight is the best word that they used in the farm bill that gives such leeway to the manufacturers. And while that's great, you have the ability to take some of these synthetics and have the exact same effect. Like THCA is a perfect example. You know, we see in Tennessee where we have the Tennessee Highway Patrol that is just completely against any flower. And they were probably the biggest proponent to try to make it illegal for the flower, because they really could not tell the difference between what is hemp and what is truly cannabis. And the enforcement side of it is you take the THCA hemp product, and once it is ignited, it's got the same characteristics and feel to the consumer. So it completely is blurred lines, and that's one of the ways that the state of Tennessee has looked to try to get some clarification from an enforcement side, is saying, let's eliminate some of these things that are getting really, really confusing and hard to enforce, and let's make it so we're trying to separate things while keeping this, you know, overall safety of the public at an important factor, because they want to make sure that the consumer is partaking and enjoying in things that are legal, but also not risking things that have not been studied or ultimately determined how they affect individuals in the long term.
And this all became possible because the 2018 hemp bill was passed. When Congress made hemp legal to go ahead and harvest, once again, bring it back, that's on them. It's all on them, because they decided to go and say, okay, Congress legalized production of hemp in 2018, and every FDA commissioner since then, Scott Gottlieb, I forget who else after that, have kicked the can down the road. They'll ask for public comment, they'll do everything else. And the same thing goes when it comes to the DEA for rescheduling cannabis, which is another issue in itself where, you know, we now have an administrative law judge will not be able to go ahead and move forward on this. It's a gridlock right here. And then I just feel like state lawmakers who could be able to be much more proactive on this will not do that. I mean, don't they realize that they are losing revenue and they're leaving it on the table by not at least knowing there are proper frameworks in place? And has anybody able to present to these legislatures this case?
I'm not sure they're the right folks that probably ought to be trying to make these decisions as part of the problem, but they're the ones we have. And a lot of them, particularly in the South, are going to be very, very, obviously very hesitant to go down the road, you know, right or wrong, whatever their motivations are, and hopefully they're good motivations. But, you know, I agree with you. The federal government, 7 years later, has done essentially nothing or close to it. So we've got the Farm Bill, and then you have some pronouncements from DEA and FDA at times, which aren't necessarily good. And it's fairly clear at this point, whether they enforce it or not, that interstate transportation of these beverages, even if okay under state law, are probably going to violate federal law and do. So I agree with it. I think the federal government, if you really want to get a solution to all this, has got to come up with some regulations. How are we going to treat this? What are we going to describe it? And other ones that really have the resources to do it. A lot of these state departments of agriculture are not really set up, I don't think, to do the chemistry and to do the science work that's necessary to help these legislators. I would hope the federal government would step in and do that and provide, again, some consistency on, okay, this is, you know, we've done the studies. The FDA can do this. They have the people, I think, to do this. But so far, they don't seem to have any political will to go down the road. And are, like you say, they just keep kicking the can. And
We want to go and come back. And what I want to do next for you both is, I also want to go into, there's a recent clinical trial that just got published about the issues about where they learned about orally administered Delta-8 THC possesses similar but milder effects than Delta-9. And there's a lot that's being said about here. And these are researchers at Johns Hopkins University that put out this study. I want to go and bring that up to the audience here and get some take on some of the things they brought up in this study here, some from the investigators. I'm here again with Tucker Herndon, Ed Brown, managing partners at Burr and Foreman here on Blunt Business. Back with more questions after this. Blunt Business continues now. I'm here with my guests.
I'm going to put you on, nephew.
All right, Unc.
Welcome to McDonald's. Can I take your order?
Miss, I've been hitting up McDonald's for years. Now it's back. We need snack wraps.
What's a snack wrap?
It's the return of something great.
Snack wrap is back.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Ed Brown, Tucker Herndon, managing partners at Burr and Foreman. And before the break, I mentioned there's a clinical trial that came out. Norm will actually report on this last week as we're recording, late April, that orally ingested Delta-8 THC produces dose-dependent psychoactive effects that are similar but milder than those associated with equivalent quantities, of Delta-9 THC. This is according to clinical trial data published in the journal Drug and Alcohol Dependence. And these are researchers from Johns Hopkins University, affiliated with Johns Hopkins University, assessing the effects of Delta-8 and Delta-9 in a cohort of 19 healthy adults. They were consuming brownies, by the way, in this study, with standardized dosages of either Delta-8 or Delta-9. The first study, this is a trial, the first study of over five decades to assess the effects of Delta-8 in human subjects. So they said, you know, there were overall, ingestion of Delta-8 THC increases in subjective cognitive performance and psychological outcomes, or physiological outcomes, rather, that were qualitatively similar to Delta-9 THC. Consistent with prior findings, Delta-8 exhibited lower potency compared to Delta-9 THC at equivalent doses. So they're saying that in the story, they brought up a couple of different things to make point. Quote, for the authors of the study, with the widespread availability of retail Delta-8 THC to consumers as a byproduct of the 2018 Farm Bill, the findings of the present study underscore the importance of establishing regulatory frameworks that address safety, labeling, and consumer education related to Delta-8 THC products. But now, why is it Delta-8 and Delta-9 are still being paired up when we have studies like this to come out? Or is it just a matter that this study's here? Is this something that can actually, you know, rattle up a little bit what's being looked at, where Delta-9 and Delta-8 are being put in the same bucket?
One would assume that as studies like this come out, people will pay attention. I mean, it's Johns Hopkins. It's not
right.
Some schlep group that decided to publish their own little sample. Yeah. But, you know, and right now you got 8, 9, and 10. Most of these new bills that are running through the states roll 8, 9, and 10 all into GAAP.
Right.
They just we're going to cover it all. Or, and I think it's a little bit of, well, if I make it big enough, I'm sure I'm capturing everything. And, you know, the Georgia bill, for example, last year just covered Delta 9. Now, all the bills this year want to say we want to add 8 and 10 to that, as well as potentially some others. But you're getting back to who's going to walk through the science, who's going to help these people understand what is and what shouldn't be in the marketplace, what does protect people, what shouldn't, you know, where we stand on this, and at least have some consistency. And again, it's the old thing. It'd be nice if we all just agree on the facts.
Right.
We don't think.
Now, the other part I want to make mention of, they mentioned here was that normal, the NORML, National Organization for Reforming Marijuana Laws, that put the study out that I found out about this, where they've urged the FDA, among other organizations, to establish regulatory guidelines governing the production, testing, labeling, and marketing of hemp-derived cannabinoid products. And we've had people that are trying to go in and knock on the doors. I don't know what's going to be done to make that more possible, to push more forward toward this. But, I mean, part of the thing is, I know, is that it's because it's a retail product available in either smoke shops or grocers or other places. That's the biggest issue, is that, you know, nobody ever put the thought of, it's really about cracking down on where it's all in mainstream stores where everybody is able to go ahead and consume and buy products or pick up products. That's been the biggest problem here, as opposed to being in the dispensaries. But I mean, nothing can even be said by any companies that even like kind of work on this and distribution, because I'm surprised that the retail sector's not come in here to try to intervene and say, listen, we want to be able to sell these products. We don't want to go and deal with all these issues. There's too much red tape going on. Like, just give us the work. Like, has the retail industry even come in to talk about this at all?
I think it's extremely fast and loose out there. I mean, what we see is anybody and everybody in the Southeast that wants to get in this game is jumping in, not understanding any of the regulations or the requirements. The stakes are learning on the fly. There is no enforceability throughout the Department of Agriculture or whatever state-specific governing agency that is in control. And you're seeing this stuff, even in Tennessee, that pops up on street corners where people are selling it out of food trucks. You have it mixed with, we've talked about it, seltzer, beer, gummies, whatever it might be, the flower. There's absolutely no regulation. We go back to the conversation, George, that we had 6 months or so ago. Like, the FDA is still not allowed you to take a cannabis product or a hemp-derived cannabis product or CBD and merge it together and manufacture something that is a gummy or a seltzer or a beer. But people are doing it all day, every day.
Yeah.
There's no enforcing agency that says, no, you can't do that. We're talking about rules of determining if you can do 8, 9, 10 flower, however it might be. But nobody's looking at the underlying consumer product that is being manufactured.
The other thing also is that at the same time, we're not getting any kind of proper enforcement from either the FDA or the FTC, and without any proper framework to work up with anything else. Well, of course, then, you know, the government can't help but also try to make their money off these companies, even though they're compromised. There's the other thing that happened earlier this year. At the start of the year, the United States Patent and Trademark Office enacting a new trademark fee structure affecting industries that, including the hemp and CBD industries. So now the new fee structure, this application now has a single-based application that changes based on the complexity and the completeness of the application. And the breakdown right now is there's a base application fee for $350 per class. Then there's a fee for custom identification of goods and services, long identifications, another $200, or insufficient information, another $100. Like, there's more adding on, and applicants who use the trademark ID manual can avoid a $200 custom language fee. But for hemp and CBD industries, the lower cost path appears unavailable. They're going to have to pay, you know, thousands of dollars, I guess, what is this, per year, I guess it is, through maintaining the trademark. Can you tell me anything about this at all?
Yeah, so what we see across the board is we see a number of CBD and hemp, either companies that are selling at retail or manufacturer, that are trying to get trademarks from the USPTO, and it has some type of flower design, and it's being denied. You cannot trademark with a what they call the marijuana leaf or using the words cannabis. The federal government won't even approve it. So
you're getting conflicting information of these are the requirements for your state underlining criteria, and this is what you can and can't do. And the federal government still has not made a determination of reclassification of cannabis, but yet we have plenty of states that allow it for medical or recreational or however. So it's the Wild West out there. And until we get underlying good governing law from the federal government, the states are going to pick and choose enforcement.
It's amazing. You just pick off here and just see the continuous things, just nitpicking along to all these companies. I don't even know how there are certain companies that decide to get into this route. I can understand after the 2018 hemp bill came out and we had the influx of every gas station, convenience store, smoke shop, having whatever products are out there, and the cracking down of illegal products that were just absolutely shouldn't have been out there in the first place. But you would think there's been some more responsibility since then. But even with that, there's still this cracking down on all these different products without any real standing to go by, because they really don't know what's going on within these. And maybe they don't even know what the process these product holders are doing to try to make their products, you know, responsible to be put on shelves.
It is the Wild West, and I agree with you. I think there's an interesting question of sometimes the Wild West was a very fruitful place to be, right? I mean, a lot of people did really well in the Wild West. And I think it's kind of interesting here. It's almost, you know, where are you going to go? You talk to particularly the suppliers, right? Which are generally small businesses. They can't, they're not allowed to distribute cross state lines. I think some probably do, whether you think, but you know, the small suppliers that are creating this stuff. Well, you know, they're living year by year, right? There was a thing this year when the Georgia law finally kind of failed, and they were quoting one of the gentlemen that makes the product, THC infused beverages, who kind of said, well, we dodged another bullet this year. You know, it's an annual event. And it's true like this in most of these states. Now, the other side of that, of course, is because it's the Wild West, because the feds don't seem to be able to come up with standardized rules and the states are kind of bouncing around all over the place, the larger suppliers are not coming in. They're not going to come in until it is all set. So there is somewhat of an advantage to some of these smaller ones that they get a chance to get their product out there. And once this does get standardized, and you got to believe it's going to happen over the next few years, then all of a sudden the large suppliers are going to decide we're in the market. And that's going to become much more difficult for the smaller ones. But it does give them some time to kind of build their brand and have a chance to build a business, hoping that every year goes by, they don't get put out of business by some state regulator.
Now, I want to just take one other thing from this story. This is from National Law Review, where I took the story. A couple of points to make, and we'll go to break once again. So the USPTO also noted that items in the ID manual must not require further inquiry, and that hemp products often invite review under the Controlled Substances Act, the Federal Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act, and other regulations, even when the products are fully compliant. And if you want to identify products and services in the industry, expect heightened examination and additional fees as a result. And the catch-22 they mentioned here as well is that businesses that follow the suggestions here and include federally compliant hemp language in their applications are still going to be punished with higher fees and often prolonged scrutiny. What a mess. What a mess this is. And there's just no answer to this. So to see what's going on in Georgia from the initial get-go and to see other states falling the same way without any real framework whatsoever. And it's like also the inhibitors of whatever compliance there is. This is where I almost wonder if companies even want to go ahead and even bother with compliance at this point because of what they're going through.
And a lot don't.
Yeah.
And they haven't since 2018.
No.
And the states, and Tucker's absolutely right. And a lot of these states, you can talk to some of the state regulators and say, is that, you know, they'll actually tell you something's, you know, impermissible or illegal. And there's billboards along the road. You can see advertising the product.
Yeah.
It was very clear. Nobody's there hiding in clear sight.
So, and then who's going to enforce it too? I mean, that's another question. Like, Greg, you say it's illegal and it's in some state law. Who's enforcing it? And is it selective enforcement? Because that's going to be a problem too.
Well, the other thing too, I was also going to make mention of as well. Well, some of these products, and I think Tucker, you had told me about this last year. We talked about this, about how those certain products that were packaged and manufactured with the thing that they would just be manufactured in batches, and they would probably never be manufactured again. But as long as they get some retailer to buy up the whole bulk of it, then they're screwed,
And then they have all they have is this extra packaging, and then they can't even sell it anymore because it's been outlawed. So some of them are just a quick buck, like as to Ed's attesting to. It's basically that as well. It's a mess. And not much work can be done about that. So we're going to go to break real quick, but when we come back, Ed, I want to go ahead and ask you about, you know, is there any kind of a relief that'd be coming in by accident because of the fact that, you know, for cannabis-related beverages, for these Delta 8, Delta 9-related kind of products, the tariffs that could be probably putting in place for imported alcoholic beverages because of the fact that you work in the food and beverage, both of you and Tucker, on this. I want to just get your take on that, if that really makes much of a difference at all. But we'll go ahead and come back and talk about that here with Ed Brown, Tucker Herndon, managing partners at Burr & Forman. Website for them is burr.com, burr.com. And take a look at that while we go to commercial break. We'll be back with final questions after this. Back with final questions here with Ed Brown and Tucker Herndon, managing partners at Burr & Forman. Website is burr.com, burr.com. So there was an article that you made mention of, Ed, that you had participated on. You spoke with the folks at BevNet about the managing tariffs on imported alcoholic beverages. We know that right now the current story, and this could change by the time we go and this recording comes out in about a month or about 6 weeks or so, that the Trump administration has been increasing tariffs on a variety of products, including alcoholic beverages, and importers and wholesalers are trying to figure out how to manage, if possible, mitigate the impact of the tariffs. So there's a lot of moving pieces right now. There's a lot of countries that are moving to the table to go ahead and at least negotiate right now on whatever those, to get those tariffs taken off, or to just equal them, make them reciprocal, whatever that might be. But that little bit of a volatility in the beverages market, does that open anything up in the cannabis market in terms of beverages? Ed or Tucker, what would you say?
So from the tariff side, no question. I mean, it you know, all products, you're going to look for substitutes, right? So the question is, does the tariff apply? And is it enough to get a consumer to decide, geez, I'm tired, I don't want to pay that much for a 12-pack of Modelo, so I'm going to look at other products. Now, they may go back to Bud Light, which they probably drank 3 years ago, but no longer drink. But they may go to non-alcoholics, which has become a big, big number. And they may well go to THC beverages, which has been growing rapidly, notwithstanding the problems we've talked about. So I don't think there's any question that, you know, the tariffs, to the extent they come into place, the extent they actually have an effect, and they're substantial enough to do that, you know, it's going to be probably at least accelerate the market shift a bit for some of these consumers. They're at least going to look at these alternative products that don't have tariffs that are more favorably priced. The problem right now is the THC beverages tend to be fairly expensive on a relative basis to a lot of just straight beer products. But it's still, no question, I think it's going to have an effect.
Because part of it would be that when it comes to alcohol beverages, I would imagine that's more beers and more malts, that there are more, or even seltzers, more distributed or more, manufactured or bottled here in the States. Meanwhile, more spirits would be coming from outside, you know, outside the country, overseas, which would be hit with those tariffs if that's going to be the case. Or people could still have the assumption that it's still going to be, that the prices after the tariffs, whatever happens, these things get dissolved or whatever, who knows how long it takes for the market to go ahead and correct themselves on those prices, and if the prices will come back down from the retailers as a result of that, because they could just take it as inflation, use it as an excuse to go and just take the price up, bring it up a little bit higher, and just keep it there.
We could do that. Yeah, it may not come back down. You
know? Right. So that's stupidity right there for the retailers by just looking, okay, if you need to go and just take a hit right now, imagine it's only going to be for a couple of months. It comes back down. Don't make any necessarily or hastily changes right now to your price line. Just wait for this to go and like play itself out, and then it might just correct itself. It might just be better off in the long run. Or they just might say to themselves, well, no matter what, it doesn't hurt for us to go and put a little extra price hike on for our sake just to be safe.
I mean, the good news for retailers, like I said, is they're probably in the supply chain the least impacted by the tariffs. And the reason for that is fairly simple. The car dealer who's at that consumer level, selling to the consumer, people... Tariff goes up on cars by $6,000. What do people do? They say, well, I'll hold on to my car for two more years. I'll just delay buying a car. Most people aren't going to delay buying alcohol. You're not going to wait 2 years to wait till the tariff comes off. So they're going to spend the money. The retailer is going to get a margin on something. They may switch their habits. They may go from spirits to THC or beer or not NAs, whatever it might be, but they're going to still come in and buy every week. And it's, so I think they have a little bit of an advantage in that they are somewhat, other than the margins may be different, the retailer is somewhat ambivalent to where it is. The consumer's still going to come in.
I think the best way you put it in here, Ed, in the article is that it says, quote, all importers, wholesalers, and retailers in the U.S. supply chain need to pay close attention to the tariffs and the impact on their businesses. But while the history of tariffs has been that they generally do not last for an extended period of time, be aware of the alternatives in dealing with the tariffs that has become an important part of managing businesses in the United States. The alternatives could be the cannabis-related beverages.
Could be any products.
Yeah.
So better we'll go.
There we go. All right. We're going to leave it there, folks. And so Ed and Tucker, again, always glad to have you. Ed, I'm glad to have you on this time around. I know we were going to try to have you on the last time before, but Tucker filled in great the last time when we put together and always glad to have you back on again. But real quickly, just to go ahead and let people know about what you do in representation for the cannabis industry, especially in the food and beverage industry as well. Tell people how they can stay connected with you and if they need to go ahead and look for outside counsel and they might want to consider your team.
Tucker, go ahead. Sure. You can always find us on the website. You can, we've got 20 offices, 9 states. We keep well connected throughout the Southeast and try to keep on a national level of what's going on throughout the overall industry. We'd love to deal with food and beverage, and that deals from manufacturers to wholesalers to retails. On the retail side, it's gas stations, grocery stores, restaurants, bars, hotels, resorts, you name it, we can deal with it. If it touches alcohol or food, we have experts throughout our overall footprint, and we love to represent anybody and everybody.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it. Website is burr.com, burr.com. Again, I'm here with the managing partners of Burr & Foreman, Ed Brown and Tucker Herndon here on Blunt Business. Thank you, gentlemen, for being all this. Really appreciate you taking time out.
George, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Circle back around and do this again. And listeners, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.